Okay, so tonight we've got this microphone up here, and throughout when the singing starts, when the music starts, we're inviting you to do something. Tonight, part of the point of the message is that God blesses us, and that God is a blessing to us. And a lot of times we say that God blesses us, and we say that God's a blessing to us, but we don't ever say what He's blessed us with or how He's blessed us. So this microphone is up here all night. And when we start the music in particular, you are welcome at any time to come up and share a time when God has blessed you, when God has made Himself known to you and thereby blessed you. It doesn't have to be fancy, it doesn't have to be, this fantastical thing. It just share a time when God has blessed you. And if you don't want to, that's fine. No one's going to stone you, except maybe me when you're not looking. I'm just kidding. That's not going to happen. Just joking. So, yeah, everybody will put their hands on your head. And then, Leviticus. Anyway, so you come up during the night at some point if you want to share your blessing and share. Logan's going to kick us off tonight. Then I'm going to teach a little bit. Then Starling's going to share. Then I'm going to teach a little bit more. And then you guys are sharing during the night. And then some other people are going to share who have been told about it, just so that we keep the ball rolling. But here you go.
Hello. Okay. I don't have to be close to that.
Yes, you do, because we'll get feedback. Go closer and let him turn it down.
Hello. How are you?
Pull it out of the monitors.
All right.
Okay. For those of you. Okay. For those of you who have talked to me for more than 5 minutes, know that I worked at Camp Tejas this summer. If you didn't know, shame on you. Camp Tejas, honestly, was one of the biggest blessings that God's put on my life. And God really did work miracles at camp. And when I showed up, let me start before that. Before camp, I found my identity in other people and the things that I did and the way that I acted. And when I showed up to camp, I got to start fresh and I got to start new, and no one really knew about me, which was really cool. And so I didn't have to base my identity on other people or the things that I did, and I was actually Logan. And God really granted me my own identity that I've struggled finding for such a long time. And He let me have my own identity in Him instead of other things. And God also put a lot of other blessings as a awesome covenant partners and stuff like that, and just amazing people I met, not only from Texas but around this world. It was a big blessing on me. So yeah,
sweet. Thanks, man. Yeah, you clap for. High five. Turn your Bibles to Exodus chapter 20. There's a key phrase. After we do the Ten Commandments, after you go through the Ten Commandments and you read the way Israel respond, there's this law about altars. And we're gonna start where we left off last week in verse 18. And I'm just gonna read it to you. So let's just go. Now, when all the people saw the thunder and the flashes of lightning and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, and the people were afraid and trembled, and they stood far off. And Moses said to them, the people said to Moses, "You speak to us and we'll listen, but don't let God speak to us or we'll die." And Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, that the fear of Him may be before you, that you may not sin." The people stood far off while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. Now, we left off last week here with kind of the phrase that if you love God, if you know who God is, you obey, right? That's kind of, it makes it simple. And how can you obey if you don't read your Bible? So to recap, what we've done over the last 2 weeks is 2 weeks ago, live, serve, love, right? That was what we talked about. You live, you serve, and you love. Christ and each other. Live, serve, love. Christ and each other. And then finally, and then last week, it was basically, and if I were to boil the point down, it was basically learn the Bible and obey His commandments. That was the point. This week, I think the point is pretty big. In Exodus 18, remember, I mean, in Exodus 20, sorry, in Exodus 19, remember what you have. There's a big mountain. Everybody with me? There's a huge mountain, right? And God comes down to the top of the mountain. And the mountain suddenly gets enveloped with fire and smoke. And it's like the mountain itself is on fire. God's at the top. Moses and the people are at the bottom. And God says, don't even let them touch the mountain. And remember what we talked about, how it's kind of hard to realize when you're on the mountain and not on the mountain, right? Because from a distance, you can see, okay, there's the mountain. But when you get up close, it's like, where's the mountain start? And where's the hill? Where is that, right? So you can't really draw a line, and it was kind of weird. But remember, the task was you couldn't get up to the mountain. And God was at the top of the mountain, and you're at the bottom, and you couldn't get up to the top. And Moses, interceding on behalf of the people, the same way Christ intercedes on our behalf, goes up to the top of the mountain and comes back down. Now, the difference between Moses and Jesus is Jesus takes you up to the top of the mountain. So you get to see Christ. Everybody there? Everybody with me? You know where we are? Okay. So in the story, you've got these people standing over here, the mountain here, God on top of the mountain, Moses at the bottom of the mountain, in between the people and God. And he turns to the people, all right, come on, let's go. And everybody's like, no, I don't want to go. And there's some things that we can see here. Number one, the response of the people of Israel. Look at it in verse 18. Now, when the people saw the flash of lightning and the thunder and the mountain smoking, halfway through the verse, the people were afraid and trembled, and they stood far off. This is the response of anybody on the earth who comes in contact with God. This happens in Isaiah 6. Isaiah sees God and says, woe to me, I'm a man of unclean lips. In Joshua 5, Joshua sees the commander of the Lord and falls down before him in fear and trembling. In 2 Samuel 12, David is caught in his sin. And Nathan goes, why have you despised the word of the Lord? And David trembles with fear. In the New Testament, the shepherds see the heavenly host of angels announcing the coming of the Lord. And what's the first thing they have to say? Hey, don't be afraid. Joseph sees an angel when he comes to visit him. Not even God, an angel, a messenger of God comes to visit Joseph. And Joseph freaks out and the angel says, hey, don't be afraid. John sees God in Revelation. In the book of Revelation, he sees God. And the first thing he does is fall down in fear. So this is common. This is a normal response to seeing what is holy. And the idea here is that when we see God, we see what we lack. When we really see God, we see what we lack. So that's why when we spend time in the Word, when we spend time in the Bible, when we spend time talking to Jesus, we see what we lack. We see what our failures are. We see what we have messed up at. And it burdens our hearts and we long to change. Right? Everybody, you with me? I haven't even gotten into the meat yet. You sure? Okay. So this is when we are reminded of the reality of God. Now, I wanted to illustrate this for you. When we see God, as holy, Number one, we realize what we lack, and then we're reminded of the reality. Now, when I was in, I don't remember if it was elementary school or junior high. Every guy that's in elementary school or junior high at some point is really squirrely. Okay? Right? You with me? Everybody? Come on, admit it. Come on. Junior high, we were squirrely, right? Elementary school, we were squirrely. Like, right? I mean, that's how we get. Right? And that's how guys are, and you can't blame them. So I was in junior high or elementary school, I can't remember which, and my mom volunteered at the school, which if you're in junior high or elementary school is the most uncool thing in the planet. When everybody's like, hey, isn't your mom the one in the office? Hey, why is she here? She's not a teacher, is she? No. You know, I mean, just over and over, these things. So I'm in class, right? And I'm trying to be the cool kid, because cool kids are smart alecks, right? And they're the class clowns, they're the ones who are like, you know, make everybody else in class laugh and take the paper and throw it on the ground. You know, and my teacher is up front, and she said something like, all right, everybody needs to take your, you know, take your hand out and turn it in. And I was like, and I don't even remember what I did, but I like, took my hand out and I turned it into a paper plane. I threw it across the room and I was like, and of course all my friends, you know, because we're dumb. And so we threw it across the room and then I was like, and then all of a sudden it clicked and I remembered that my mom was in the back of the room. So I went, and I heard, John. And you know that feeling like from 8 miles away when your parents clear their voice, you know, and you're like, and you know you're in trouble. Like, I'm not talking, they clear their voice and they're just trying to get your attention. But like, you know, you're in trouble and it's like you could be in another state and your mom could come outside and you could be in trouble. She could be like, ah. And you'd be like, oh, like, you know it, you know it. So this is how it felt, right? It was like, ugh. And like all the hairs on my neck stood up on edge. And my mom was in the back of the room and she's, John. And then like, oh no, what did I do? And my friends are like, you know, and the teacher just kind of, I mean, the teacher didn't even pay any attention. Just kept writing on the board. His mama going to take care of him. And it was in New Orleans. So it was like, that boy beaten. He going to get a beating right now. She going to take him out of his class. He's going to be dead tomorrow. You know, and just, I remember sitting at my desk and the reality of who my mom was. And the fact that she was in the room and that I was an idiot. The reality just settled in on me. And the rest of the class, I was like this. Teacher would ask me a question. I'd be like, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And I don't even remember what happened. I know I went home and my mom punished me and I don't remember what happened. I must have blocked it out. That's how bad it must have been. But this is what, I tell you that story to illustrate. This is what happens when you are confronted by the reality of who God is. When you're confronted by the reality of God, all of a sudden, the desire to exalt yourself is suddenly stripped away. And you're afraid. And you're afraid because you know you deserve the punishment. And you know that you are in trouble. So you go from to, and you remember that God has been there. And that's the response we're seeing with the people of Israel. You see, they're standing in front of the mountain and God has landed on top of the mountain and they go. And Moses comes to them. Don't be afraid. They're like, we're not going anywhere near that. We know we're going to die. And so, just like I suddenly stopped smarting off in class because I was caught by the reality of my mom. The people of Israel suddenly stop feeling free to do what they were doing. They suddenly stop allowing themselves luxuries. This has become a new favorite phrase of mine in counseling. And that is to look at my brothers and sisters in Christ and lovingly say, you are not allowed that luxury as a Christian. They're not allowed to continue in sin as a Christian. Because if you've been confronted by a holy, righteous God, you won't continue in sin. Now, the second thing I want to point out is that verse 19, if you'll look at it with me. The people said to Moses, you speak to us and we will listen, but do not let God speak to us lest we die. Okay, so the second thing that comes, the first thing is that you realize what the response of unholy people is to a holy God. That you recognize the reality and you see your lack. The second thing is that there's a recognition of what we deserve versus what we need. That is what we deserve versus what we need. The Israelites tell Moses, listen, we deserve death. We're going to talk to him. We're going to die. If we talk to that God, we die. Versus what they need. Moses, please go talk to him for us. So go talk to him for us. In the same way, we express what we need over what we deserve. We desperately need Christ to go before us to God. What we deserve is utter and complete annihilation. What we need is Jesus. What we deserve is death. Now this is try telling that to people who are entitlement people. Everybody know what entitlement means? Who you don't? Okay, thanks. Entitlement means that you think you deserve something. That you think you deserve something. Now, in our culture, we think we deserve something. We do. In our culture, we think we deserve, and we even put it in our Declaration of Independence, and I'm not saying we're wrong, but we think that we deserve, as human beings, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's not necessarily a deserve. It's not necessarily something we're entitled to. For example, until the United States, if you were born into a lower class, then you stayed in that lower class. Reality was that not everybody deserved the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Not everybody deserved that. Not everybody was entitled to it. But in our culture, we tell you when you're born that you are entitled to that. The problem with that as Christians is that Jesus tells us we're entitled to nothing. That there's nothing we're entitled to. But that he gives it to us freely. And that everything is a gift. I mean, think about this. We're talking some about blessings tonight. And everything that Christ gives you is a gift. And you're not really entitled to anything. Therefore, anything you have is a present. Anything you have is a gift from God. You with me? Everybody with me? Okay, right. Everything we have is a gift from God. I'm glad you're awake. I'm glad. Everything we have is a gift from God. So if everything we have is a gift from God and we're entitled to nothing, but he gives us everything, the very fact that you're in this room breathing in air conditioning, freely able to speak your mind, is a gift. That in and of itself is a blessing that God has given you. This is why I love when people, it's so easy to share the gospel when people are like, God ain't never done nothing for me. Because, I mean, you're like, really? You realize you wouldn't breathe without him. God ain't never, and my favorite is, God ain't never done nothing for me. And they got like a Rolex on and incredibly nice shoes. And, you know, huh? Double. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'll do a triple. God ain't never done nothing for me, no. So and they got this Rolex on and a really nice shoes and they got really nice clothes on and they're like, God ain't never done nothing for me, no. I don't know. God never do nothing for me, never, ever, ever. I just thought I'd keep going. So like, and it's so easy to share the gospel with those people because you're like, wait a second. If you could just get this in your brain, you don't deserve to breathe. And yet you are. Sometimes we want to say you're taking up my air, right? Because they probably shouldn't be talking. But it's just one of these things. They say, God's never done anything for me. And you go, well, wait a second. You're alive. Well, yeah, that was my parents. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Your parents would have killed you a long time ago. Right? I mean, that's what would happen, right? So God, the very fact that you're alive is a blessing from Christ. And notice, what we deserve is death. What we need is Christ. There's no pretense here. There's no expecting something different. There's no, with the people of Israel, there's no thought that they deserve something. Because when they're confronted by a holy God and they look up at the mountain, they realize there's no pretense. There's no, I'm holy. I'm holy enough to get halfway up that mountain. There's none of that. It's I can't make it. And so the recognition is that Jesus must mediate for us. Jesus must stand in the gap for you. The only way to get from the bottom of the mountain to the top is through Christ. Everybody with me? Check out what Moses does. Check out what Moses does. Moses, where does Moses go? Yeah, in particular, what does that verse say? Yeah, he goes into the thick darkness of God. Now, this was weird to me because in the New Testament, God is light, sin is dark, right? We studied this in the book of John and in 1 John over and over and over. God is light, sin is dark. Everybody with me? Come on. Everybody with me? Okay, so sin is dark, God is light. Now, here in the Old Testament, it says Moses drew near to the thick darkness that was God. Thick darkness of God. So I did a little bit of a word study, and in Hebrew, the word darkness indicates something that is unknown. Something that is unknown, completely deep and unknown. And what I found was that it's even more than that. It's like the scary unknown. Now, there was a theologian named John Calvin who said there was a hidden, dark side to God. And his point was that there was this unknown side of God that was just terrifying when you started thinking deeply. Because when you start thinking deeply, theologically, one way or the other, go Calvinism, go Arminianism, go Pelagianism, go hyper-Calvinism, whatever you do, when you start thinking deeply, all of a sudden, God becomes really scary because we can't figure everything out, because we can't put him into a little box and go, OK, well, God fits right here on the shelf next to Rick Warren and John MacArthur. No, we can't do that. We have to expand our ideas beyond what we can think. And so here, I think when Moses wrote this down, by the way, Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible. When Moses wrote this down, I think what he was trying to convey in listening to God and hearing what God was saying and writing down the story, what he was trying to convey was, I walked into the unknown parts of God that are scary and frightening. I mean, how scary is it that we can say with confidence, the Lord causes what is good and creates what is evil, and still call this God a good God? By the way, that's the book of Isaiah 47:5. Isn't it 47:5? I think it's 47:5. The Lord causes what is good and creates what is evil. And the idea there is that God creates calamity. I have to clarify that. God creates calamity, or what looks evil to us. Circumstances that look horrible. How frightening is it that you can say with confidence that? I mean, think about it. Really think about it. How terrifying is it that God is in control of the car wrecks that have happened in our lives? That God is in absolute control of the deaths that have happened in our lives? That God is in control of the sicknesses that we've gotten, that God is in absolute control of these things. How terrifying is that? And at the same time, how incredibly comforting is it? I mean, this is the thick darkness of God that Jesus takes us into through the knowledge of Christ. So we go with Jesus into the thick darkness. And there can be no pretense. There can be no trying to be righteous on your own. There could be no standing up on your own accord in front of God. God, that's not permissible. That is not a luxury you have before the Lord. Look at chapter 20, verse 22. And the Lord said to Moses, thus you shall say to the people of Israel. Now this thus you shall say marks a change in God's tone. He suddenly goes from the story to talking. Moses has gone into the thick dark, and God goes, all right, Moses, this is what I want you to say. And so from this chapter all the way, I think all the way to 33, Moses is being talked to by God all the way to 32. All the way to 32, he's talking to God. Now, he's come down, he's given them the Ten Commandments, he's told them what they are. God himself delivered the Ten Commandments to him. And then he comes to this point, and God says, "Thus you shall say to the people." And he goes, "You have seen," this is verse 22, "you have seen for yourselves that I have talked with you from heaven. You shall not make gods of silver to be with me, nor shall you make for yourself gods of gold." Okay, now I don't know about you, but if God came down and landed on top of a mountain and then yelled at me from heaven 10 things to do, and the first one was, "Don't make any graven images, don't make any idols, don't, I am God, don't have any other gods with me or before me, no other gods," I don't think I'm going to have to be reminded, right? I mean, the mountain's freaking on fire, right? And it's exploding in front of my eyes, exploding, like, if I walk forward, I die, right? There's a big trumpet blast that kept going while God was talking. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be afraid enough not to do that. But God knows better. God knows better, because in chapter 32, we're going to see that they do it anyway. God says, huh? Right, right. They did it. It was dumb. Anyway, so verse 22, when he says, "You shall not make any gods of gold," verse 23, when he says, "You shall not make any gods of silver to be with me, nor shall you make any, make for yourself gods of gold," he very easily draws out that there's not supposed to be any other gods except for Yahweh. That's it. Yahweh is the only God. Jesus, God, Yahweh, the Father, the Spirit, the Son, three in one, Trinity. Holy, immortal, right. I mean, that the thing we sing about all the time, that God is the only real God. And so he says, "Don't make any other gods before me." Now, I have to ask, all of you are familiar with the title of idol worship. Every one of you are familiar with it. And you know that it goes beyond making little statues in your house and bowing down before them. You know that it goes beyond that. You know that idol worship can be worshiping money, can be worshiping popularity, can be worshiping image, can be worshiping anything other than God. And you know, you're educated enough to know that worship is not just something you do here on Wednesday night at 7:20 whenever I stop talking, or on Sunday morning whenever Mike is up there. You're smart enough to know that worship is a way of life. So before we go on to talk about how God has blessed us, I need to ask you, are there idols in your life that need to be removed? No other gods before me. I'm not sugarcoating this. I'm not telling you a story. I'm not going to make this cute. Are there idols in your life? Are there any? They need to be removed. God is very plain. God is very plain. And then second, let's read verses 24 through 26 here. "An altar of the earth you shall make for me, and sacrifice on burnt offerings, and your peace offerings, and your sheep, and your oxen. In every place where I cause my name to be remembered, I will come and to you and bless you. If you make an altar of stone, you shall not build it out of hewn stones, for if you wield your tool on it, you profane it. And you shall not go up by the steps to my altar, that your nakedness not be exposed on it." Okay, the second question I have to ask you before we can talk about God's blessings are, what other altars have you been worshiping on other than God's? Like, we talk about the idea of worship as a lifestyle and not worshiping other gods. But what platforms have you been raising yourself up on to worship God in? Are they his platforms? Are they what he has said is okay? This is not something I can point out for you. This requires you. So before we get to a little bit of celebration, I wanted to give you a couple of seconds just of silence, that you would be able to repent of worshiping other idols, that you would be able to ask God where His altars are, and that you would be able to speak to Him clearly tonight. So let's just, for a second, or three, or ten. Lord, forgive us for having taken Your name upon ourselves and lived in idolatry. Do not cast us from Your presence, but keep us close. Lord, forgive us for building platforms of self-exaltation to worship You on. Forgive us for making ourselves more important than You are. Lord, we love You. Forgive us. Amen. Okay, so there's a section here in verse 24, the second half, that I read this week, and it lit me up inside to think about this. It says, in every place where I will cause My name to be remembered, I will come to you and bless you. So in every place where God has His name exalted, where God causes His name to be remembered, where God acts, where God does not stand still, He blesses you. In every place. So I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to talk a little bit. Starling's going to tell you a story. And then I'm going to talk a little bit. Then we're going to start praising God, and the mic's open. And we'll go as long as you feel led to. 3 years ago, I was looking for a job. I was following the command of the Lord to leave North Carolina, a youth group that I loved and cherished with all my heart. Some guys that taught me how to do ministry, period. The youth taught me this, by the way, you teach me here, taught me how to do ministry, period, and that really got my feet in the door. And I got a call from James Doyle. And this is a story, I know you all think you've heard this story. You haven't. I got a call from James Doyle, and I went to Brother Jim, and I said, listen, I was honest. I had not had anybody ever mentor me. I have never had a spiritual mentor of any kind. Maybe my brother, maybe. But even him, never as close. And so I called Jim Doyle and I said, Jim, I was applying for the job and we had interviewed twice. And I called him and I said, Jim, I love the prospect of coming to work at your church. I really do. But I need to know something. Do you think you can mentor me? Because it's as much up to you as it is to me to be mentored. And I said, do you think that you can mentor me? And this is what you've never heard. And Jim said, well, no. But there's a guy at our church who would be great. And I was like, okay. All right. Well, the time came and I came down here to meet with the staff and I met this man. And I sat across from him at an IHOP, and I got to listen to him talk. And as he spoke, everything in me lit up with, I can learn from this guy. And since, I go into his office once a week just to sit and listen to him talk about ministry for an hour at least every week. And your youth pastor, Chuck, has been mentoring me for 3 years. And has been teaching me how to do this and what to do. And I've had times when I've repented to him. And I've had times when I've spoken openly with him about frustrations And I've had times when I've been absolutely in love with what he says, and when he and I have hashed something out. But I was tremendously blessed. You see, I've never had a spiritual mentor. And I came here, and God just said, hey, here's one. And guess what? You're not going to have any problems, because he made this place perfect before you got here. He made this place fantastic before you ever arrived. In fact, he's been working in this field for 7 years. And he's pretty flipping incredible. So I walked into a place where I'm young, I'm idealistic, I'm a bit strong-willed, I'm a bit overbearing. And I walked into this place and I said, I need a mentor. And God went, Chuck Bean. And since then, everything that we've done as a youth group, though Chuck hasn't known it all the time, and though he's not your youth pastor, everything we have done has come with the influence of him on my life. Now, that's an incredible blessing to me, because I've never had a spiritual father. Maybe my brother. Maybe. But this guy is teaching me. And that's awesome. And you see, what I'm trying to get at is that in every place where the Lord comes to make his name remembered, he will bless you. The Lord came to make his name remembered here. And he has blessed me personally. So there's a couple things I want you to see. Number one, the law, the first five books of the Bible, is evangelical by nature. Hear me, it's evangelical by nature. Everywhere I make my name known, God says, in every place where I make my name remembered, I'm going to bless you. The law is evangelical by nature. So by nature, the law is to reach the world. When Abraham stands up before God, and God says, Abraham, in chapter 22, verse 18, he says, if you walk with me, you're going to be mine. By your seed, all the nations of the world are going to be blessed. Now, yes, that's about Jesus. It's also about those who follow Jesus. So those who follow Jesus are supposed to bless the world. I mean, how awesome is that? God made the law evangelical by nature. Now, Moses, in his experience with God, he has this incredibly hard, grueling experience with God. And yet God says, I'm going to do this with Pharaoh, and you're going to walk through this trial so that the nations will know who I am. Right? Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says, you are the light of the world, the city on a hill. A light on a hill cannot be dark, salt of the earth cannot be. Let me read it. How about that? I keep misquoting everything. Go to Matthew chapter 5. You're going to look at verse 5, I think, or no. Yeah, no, Matthew 5, I think it may be 17. 13. 14. There you go. You're the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to the whole house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Obedience to the command of God is evangelical. It is intended to reach the masses. So if you obey the command of the Lord, it is intended to reach the masses of people. Now, next, the law and knowledge of the law and going with God and being blessed by God by where he or finding places where God is remembered is an adventure of God. It's the adventure of God. Now, I read in a book recently called Just Courage, where a man said that he, his dad and his brother went and climbed a mountain. And his dad and his brother started climbing the mountain. He was the younger brother. And he said, I don't want to climb the mountain. I want to stay at the bottom. And he argued with his dad for about an hour about staying at the bottom of the mountain. And so he stays at the bottom of the mountain in this activity center. His dad doesn't argue with him forever, you know, so he's like, okay, fine, you can stay at this activity center. So he stays at the activity center. He walks around. He sees all the stuffed animals, you know, the taxidermy animals. He sees all the videos on loop about how great the mountain is. He sees all the pictures of trees on the wall. He sees all the pictures of the mountain. And then he stops, and for about 2 or 3 or even 4 hours, he's down there by himself. And he's bored. The stuffed animals start looking like stuffed animals. They're no longer scary. They're, you know, they look like stuffed animals. And the father and the other brother come down, and they walk into the thing. And the younger brother just realized what he had missed. You see, it was a hard climb to the top of the mountain. It was a rough climb to the top of the mountain. It was a lot of work to get to the top of the mountain. But his father and his brother had something that he didn't. They had stories of a climb. They had the camaraderie of two people who had been on a climb. They had the strength of a relationship that had been built together by a climb. They had stories of a mighty, mighty climb. Most of us want to stay down at the bottom of the mountain when God calls us to do something. And in this book, Just Courage, he says, we don't let go. And going up the mountain, in climbing up the mountain, we don't let go of what we're good at. It's not that we give up things that we're good at. Instead, it's that God simply wants us to go on a more demanding climb where we need his help. And where he delights to give it. Living in remembrance of God is to be on adventure with God. To live in remembrance of God is to be on adventure with God. Now, God calls us on a mission, and it's exciting. So we must be ready for God to pour out his power. Do you guys believe God has honest to goodness power? No, I mean, I'm asking seriously. Do you believe that? You believe that if you prayed, somebody might get healed? You believe that God actually does miracles? You believe that God actually does change the hearts of men? So you're not one of those people who qualifies everything you say with, Lord, if it's in your will. Or are we? You're not one of those people who, Lord, heal him. But if it's not in your will, just as like a catch 22, you know, I love it when I do the same thing. It's not a good thing, by the way. It's a lack of faith is what it is. A lack of confidence in the Word of God. And that lack of faith, by the way, won't affect your prayer, but it'll affect you. It'll affect you. And we say that, don't we? I mean, we go, Lord, I just pray for Bubba. I pray that you would heal his leg, make him better. But Lord, if it's not in your will, just be a good God. I mean, it's like we pretend that we know God when we ask the first part of it, and then we realize, oh, we don't know you, so we're not going to ask. Right? I mean, that's what we do. How do you expect blessing to be poured out on you if you don't have faith that God is going to be powerful? I mean, how? How do you expect his blessing to come to you if your faith is such that you don't ask for things for real? And how? We can't. We must be ready for God to bring his power. Starling's going to come up and share a blessing story, and then I'm going to finish real quick. Yay!
Okay, these are lyrics to a song I wrote. It's Hear my prayer, O Yahweh. Give your ear, answer me. I long for your will to be done. I have great sorrow in my heart. Father, bring salvation to this place. Lost empty faces pass me by. They can't see you. Why are they blind? I try to speak, but they refuse to listen. They don't want to hear of your name and its glory. Father, please bring salvation to this place. I wrote this when I was sort of heartbroken about people around me who didn't know Christ. And it was hard for me to understand why, if I were praying so much about this, why it wasn't happening. And I just didn't understand. And I was reading in Lamentations. Lamentations 3 is one of my favorite. And this sort of popped out to me. It's, but this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. Just reading this revealed to me how God is my hope, and the things around me, if people don't come to know Christ, it's going to be okay, because the most important thing is that God's glory and God's power is made known, and I know that that will be accomplished.
Yay. Are we in a jazz club now? Okay. Now, I want to be real frank. We are good at engaging God in the climb. We're good at going with God on adventures. As a group, we're pretty good at going with God on adventures. But there's so much more to us that God has in store. And there's so many more things he wants to do. And there's so much further he wants to go. And there's so many places that we haven't been. And there's so many things yet to do. And there's so many things yet that God is going to do in our midst and in our city. There's a deep climb into the mountain of God ahead. Because everywhere he makes himself known, God becomes consuming. He said it again, everywhere that God makes himself known, God becomes consuming. Flip to Hebrews chapter 12, if you will. In verse 18, the author of Hebrews begins to write about this very story in the book of Exodus. In verse 18, everybody with me? And he writes about the story, and he's talking to Christians. For you have not come to what may be touched, a blazing fire and darkness and gloom and a tempest and a sound of a trumpet and a voice whose words made the hearers beg that no further messages be spoken to them. For they could not endure the order that was given. If even a beast touch this mountain, it shall be stoned. Indeed, so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, I trembled with fear. But you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God and the heavenly Jerusalem, and two innumerable angels in festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and God, the judge of all, to the spirits and the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. See that you do not refuse him who is speaking. For they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth. Much less will we escape if we reject him who warns from heaven. At that time his voice shook the earth. But now he has promised, yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens. This phrase, yet once more, indicates the removal of things that are shaken. That is, things that have been made in order that the things that cannot be shaken will remain. Therefore, let us be grateful for receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken. And thus, let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. For our God is a consuming fire. The author of Hebrews there tells you that God has exchanged the kingdom of this earth and the things that we have here for the kingdom of heaven and glorious things to come. And one day he will shake this earth to nothing. And all that will remain is what he has made that cannot be shaken. And that is his kingdom. That is his glory. That is his name. That is his blessing. And real briefly, look at verses 25 through 26 with me. If you make an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stones, for if you would wield your tool on it, you'd profane it. And you shall not go up by the steps on my altar, that your nakedness be not exposed. First off, be prepared. Be prepared to use what God has given you. You need not adjust much. You don't need to change or alter your plans much. Be prepared to use what God has given you. God has placed you where you are for a reason. Second, notice he says, don't walk up the steps. This is two reasons. Number one, if a priest walked up the steps and he's got these big flowing robes, right? And he walks up the steps and the robe happens to drift off to the side. Everybody's going to be like, whoa, right? So that's number one. Don't walk up the steps because, you know, you're going to show yourself and that's going to be gross. That's the first one. The second thing about that, though, is there's something to not walking up the steps of the altar yourself. This is the idea of exalting yourself. When you come to lay something at God's feet, you don't walk up steps to do it. You don't exalt yourself to do it. You don't come up to the stage of a church and go, you know, I just want everybody to know I'm laying down this trial. I'm laying it down at the feet of Christ. You know, you don't do that. Why? Because you're not laying anything down. You're exalting yourself. Now, some people legitimately come before the congregation and confess sin. I'm not knocking that. But there's a great deal of us that go up and we're like, I stood in front of the precipice of the Lord and I laid down my guilt. Don't do that. That's exalting yourself. Don't go up the steps. God made the altar himself. God goes up the steps. God does the sacrificing. So exalt Christ and Christ alone. And then finally, and this is going to sound a little weird, be the remembrance. Remember the Lord and be blessed. Okay, so follow my logic. If a righteous life, what we're told in 1 John is that a righteous life makes the word of the Lord known. So if a righteous life makes the word of the Lord known, and makes his name remembered, then in that place where you live a righteous life, blessing of the Lord will follow. Unspeakable blessing will follow. Follow my logic. If a righteous life, we know from 1 John and from this book, if obedience to Christ, if a righteous life makes the Lord's name known, makes him remembered in that place, then strive to be righteous, and the blessings of the Lord come down on you. And you're blessed. So, if the praise team would come on up. Tonight, we did something a little different. I'm going to leave this thing up here, this mic. And if at any time you want to share a time when you've been blessed, feel free. Just walk up and share it. The praise team is going to share intermittently. when they feel like they've been blessed. But please, go ahead. Let's, Logan, you want to kick us off with prayer? Thanks.
My blessing recently has been that, I don't know about y'all, but sometimes it can be really hard to always be the one that keeps trying things, keeps positive. You know, you have that attitude in life, and you know, people might wonder about it, but sometimes it's really hard. And recently, God put something on my heart that He doesn't expect you to do it by yourself. You know, He gives you this, He gives you power to do it. You know, it's from Him, and He gives it to you so that you can do what He asks you to do. You know, He's never going to leave you alone out there. So even when you're really, really nervous about something or you're not sure if you can even do it, it's not like God's leaving you out there alone. You know, He's given you the power to do it. It's definitely blessed my life.
Hi, guys. I'd never pass up a chance to speak about God. But John said that once God makes His character known and once He makes His presence known, He becomes consuming. And I just wanted to testify how true that is. And I guess just to be encouragement, because it's really easy sometimes to always, like Hannah said, feel like you're the only one enforcing positive things or the only one trying in a relationship. A friend today actually talked to me about how at home she's having trouble with her mom, and she's like, you know what, I'm giving up because it's not making a difference anyways. And I just wanted to encourage y'all with just a few examples of how you may not ever realize what difference you're making. One of the examples is my sister, and she thinks that my standards for dating are kind of ridiculous. And I've been talking to her for years, and she always comes back with the comments, well, that is so silly, or I can't believe you'd wait for your first kiss, or you can't even know someone without having an intimate relationship. And, I mean, she would always, respect me, but kind of put it down. And yet something that Christ drove me to continue to just keep staying strong, even though sometimes it's hard when people judge you. And just one day she came to me and she was like, you know what? You know that thing about waiting to have a kiss? Well, I figured I'd try that this time. Or, you know, you can have a relationship without having intimacy, physical intimacy and stuff. And I don't know, it was just exciting to realize after all that, after just a few days ago, she said that I was silly and my ideas were ridiculous. And then I was just defeated in honoring Christ, because I'm thinking this isn't getting through to anyone. And after 3 or 4 years, all of a sudden she just finally gets it. And there's so many other things like that, just different people that you think are so closed and so hard to get to, and all of a sudden they're just open to Christ. And I just wanted to encourage you all to never give up, and Christ is always working even when you can't see Him. And usually that's when He's working most, when everything looks cold and hard. I don't know. I just wanted to tell y'all that Christ has blessed me by opening up people for Him, because that's something only that He can do. And also by His grace, showing that even when I do mess up, because I'm not perfect, that He allows forgiveness and that He renews our character. So if y'all feel like y'all have lost all hope, don't ever believe it, because it's a lie from the enemy. Anyways, that's all.
Tell y'all real quick about how God's blessed my life. A few years ago, I dealt with a lot of frustrations. The main frustration I had, though, was reading. You think that has nothing to do with anything spiritual, but for my whole life, I could not read. Not that I couldn't read, but I couldn't read to understand anything at all. I saw words. I saw words put together to form sentences, whatever. But I could never read in order to understand. And then a few years ago, after I was saved, I thought, well, I'm still going through the same problem in my life and the same struggle in my life, is that I can't read. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, and I can't even tell you what it was, And some people may claim, well, Rudy, it's because, you know, you take medication or whatever. But I can honestly tell you that it was before that, all that stuff. All of a sudden, I could see words that would make sense in these sentences, in these paragraphs, in these chapters. But what happened is that eventually that transferred over to my spiritual life, because all of a sudden I could read God's word and I could understand his word. And not only could I read it and understand it, but I absolutely loved it. And so now every time I read anything, whether it's the Bible or whether it's something that is just a book, and I understand it, I get this joy inside me because I know that God has done this thing in me and that I can know him through his word, and that I can love him and I can live his word, and that I can understand what everything is about when it comes to him. And so it's just a blessing to know that God can take a weakness and he can do whatever he wants with it in order for his name to be glorified.
For some of you may not know, I lost my dad about 6 years ago. And over the summer, my mom got remarried, and it really hit me hard. Everything just fell on top of me, and I was just hopeless. I didn't know how to get through it. Well, I literally made myself sick. Like, I had to go. It was at GA camp. I had to go to the emergency room because I was actually sick. But when I was laying in the hotel room waiting on my mom to come get me, I just sat and laid and prayed to God the whole entire time. And he showed me that this major blessing that I have in my life, that I had my dad who I knew loved me and cared for me with all his heart, and I have God who will always love me and be there for me anytime I need him. And now I have Tommy, my stepfather, who I know loves me and cares for me. I've had three dads in my life that love me and care for me, and a lot of people don't have that. And it was a major blessing. And also, I wanted to tell you that whenever something bad happens, like I lost, my dad was the world to me. He meant everything to me. I loved him so much. And when I lost him, it was like my world had died and I didn't know what to do. But I just want to tell y'all that if you look to God, you can get through anything. If you pray, you lay it all down to him. I know easier said than done, but if you just lay it all down to him and say, God, I'm going to let you handle this and I'm going to step back, he will get you through it. And in the end, there will be a major blessing.
Anybody else want to share a time or something? Come on, Jimmy.
I just want to say God's blessed my life with a fellowship of Christians like my mom and Kayla and Connor and people in our youth, and it just helps me a lot.
Hi, Bill.
Go ahead.
Well, kind of funny, since when I asked this question, I was like, darn, what did I think of? And I was like, I know, it's music, because, you know, most of the time we think music, entertainment, blah, but sometimes when I just listen to a song, it's just, sometimes just I want to sing it, just not because it sounds great or, you know, great music, but because of the message, because just sometimes I just see the rhythm, the melody, and then the words just makes perfect harmony, and just want to share that to people, to show, look what this mess, what the song has to give, and just, I just love it. And I mean, obviously, since I'm playing an instrument and singing and all that, but just more, I'm just blessed by music, since just a powerful tool that anyone can use, basically, just to remember of all God's promises and all.
This one's not as dramatic, but it's just really exciting, and I wanted to share it. We probably, most of you know, have been trying to sell our house for like, oh my gosh, it feels like 2 or 3 years now. And the reason we're trying to sell it is because we are in a literal financial crisis where just things aren't going too great. And we got to a point where my mom said, you know what, I wanted to bring God glory out of the house. I mean, out of everything I do. And I was just thinking, how does it bring God glory if our house forecloses? But if that's what we have to do, then that's what we have to do. And she said, okay, so by the end of summertime, if our house isn't sold, we're going to have to foreclose it. And she was just really disappointed because she was beating herself up about how that does not bring God glory to not see him pull us through hardships and crises, I guess you could say, because that's what it is. Anyways, we decided to hang in there a little bit longer for some odd reason, which my mom showed awesome faith in this. It was incredible. It just completely opened my eyes because she would just randomly one day, like, clean the house like crazy. And she's like, someone's come to look at our house tomorrow. Just saying it in faith. And literally every time someone looked at our house the next day. I don't know how she did it. It was really awesome. But anyways, we had tons of looks on our houses and tons of close calls every time, oh, someone's going to buy it. And then it ended up being turned down. But literally, I think a week before we decided to foreclose it, someone's trying to buy our house right now. And so they already have the contract in, and they got their thing extended. So on the 20th, our house is sold, and it doesn't mean that our financial struggles are necessarily over right away, but it does prove that God is faithful to those who are obedient and patient, and that he always makes a way. So it's very exciting and a very up time right now for our family. Praise God. Anyways, that's it.
Awesome.